Chapter 9, Area Defense. This chapter addresses general considerations, organization of forces, and control measures typical to an area defense. It then discusses how to plan, prepare, and execute an area defense. Lastly, this chapter discusses the variations of the area defense. General considerations for an area defense. An area defense capitalizes on the strength inherent in a closely integrated defensive operation. An area defense enables forces to consolidate, reorganize, and transition to another tactical operation, such as the offense. Commanders may assign their subordinate units the task of conducting an area defense. Subordinate echelons defend within their assigned areas as part of their higher echelon's operations. Units conduct an area defense when directed to defend or retain specified terrain. They cannot resource a striking force. Their available forces possess less mobility than enemy forces. The terrain affords natural lines of resistance and limits the enemy force to a few well-defined avenues of approach, thereby restricting the enemy force's maneuver. They have enough time to organize their defensive positions. Terrain constraints and lack of friendly air superiority limit the striking force's options in a mobile defense to a few probable employment options. Conditions require the preservation of forces when transitioning from a focus on the performance of offensive operations to stability tasks. Units conducting an area defense combine static and mobile tasks to accomplish their missions. Static actions usually consist of fires from prepared positions. Mobile actions include using the fires provided by units in prepared positions as a base for counterattacks and repositioning units between defensive positions. Units can use their reserves and uncommitted forces to conduct counterattacks and spoiling attacks to desynchronize enemy forces or prevent them from massing. Organization of forces for an area defense. An area defense is organized with a security force, main body, and a reserve. Since an area defense focuses on retaining key terrain, most of the unit's combat power in the main battle area is positioned to support the defense of that terrain, while security forces provide early warning. Security force. Units balance their need for strong security forces to shape their operation and their main body's main effort. They usually allocate security forces to provide early warning and protect those main body forces, systems, and locations necessary to conduct their main effort from unexpected enemy contact. The location of these security forces is usually in front of the main defensive positions where forces are contiguous with one another. These security forces locate on avenues of approach between their respective protected forces and known or suspected enemy force locations on non-contiguous battlefields. Maneuver battalion and BCT security forces normally conduct forward screen or guard operations. Division and corps commanders may employ a forward covering force. Division commanders may have their forward security forces conduct a guard if their parent corps employs a forward covering force. Commanders designate flank security forces to cover gaps on the unit's flanks. This occurs when gaps between units develop during the conduct of defensive operations. A flank screen or guard is critical if an enemy avenue of approach into the defended area from the flanks could be uncovered during the defense. Main body. Units build their main effort around identified key terrain. A unit's main effort in an area defense focuses on retaining that key terrain by using fires from mutually supporting prepared positions supplemented by one or more counterattacks and repositioning forces. A unit's main effort normally involves close combat since an area defense emphasizes terrain retention. Units normally position their echelon's main body, the bulk of combat power, in their MBA, where they want to conduct their main effort. They organize their main body to fix and finish attacking enemy forces. Most of the units in a main body deploy into prepared defensive positions within their MBA. However, some mobile elements may hide and are ready to deploy where and when needed. Reserve. Units' defensive plans should be able to succeed without use of their reserves. However, their reserves' most likely task is to conduct counterattacks based on previously prepared plans. Lower echelon commanders used their reserves primarily to conduct local counterattacks to restore the integrity of their defense or to exploit opportunities. Senior commanders used their reserves to seize the initiative from enemy forces when opportunities to do so present themselves. For example, a corps commander may choose to employ their reserve against enemy fire support assets and follow-on forces to limit the enemy commander's ability to mass combat power on the corps main effort. Commanders can assign their reserve a wide variety of tasks to accomplish, and their reserves need to be flexible enough to perform other tasks. Commanders may find it necessary to commit their reserves to restore the integrity of their defenses by blocking enemy penetrations or reinforcing fires into engagement areas. Secondary tasks for a reserve may also include reinforcing the defense of committed forces, blocking or containing enemy forces that penetrate friendly defensive positions, relieving depleted units and providing for continuous operations, reacting to threats directed against friendly sustainment efforts, extending the flanks of defending units to prevent their envelopment, covering retrograde movements. Defending units usually have difficulties establishing and resourcing their reserves because they are normally facing enemy forces with superior combat power. Nevertheless, commanders at each echelon down to the battalion retain reserves as a means of ensuring mission accomplishment and for exploiting opportunities through offensive action. Units may not be able to resource separate reserves in some situations. Therefore, they may constitute all or a portion of their reserves from their security forces after those forces conduct a rearward passage of lines through MBA units. If units employ a security force as the reserve for an area defense, they withdraw the force so it has sufficient time to occupy the reserve positions, perform the necessary degree of reconstitution, and prepare plans for reserve roles. However, this is not the preferred option. Before battle handover, the senior commander must state the acceptable risk to security forces or the disengagement criteria in quantifiable terms, such as friendly strength levels, time, or event. In this case, after completing the rearward passage, security forces move to assembly areas to prepare for their subsequent operations. These areas should be free from enemy interference and clear of MBA units, LOCs, and MSRs. Control measures for an area defense. Units organize their area defense by designating engagement areas. Using the 7 steps of EA development, defending units determine where to place BPs and how best to assign areas to subordinate units. Units create security areas in front of their MBAs. Security areas should be deep enough to make enemy forces displace as much of their supporting forces as possible, such as cannon artillery, sensors, and air defense artillery gun systems, before attacking. Units also designate echelon support areas. Area defense maneuver graphic control measures may include engagement areas, boundaries, FIBA, battle handover lines, strong points, TRPs, NAIs, TAIs, decision points, passage points, various other fire control and counter-mobility control measures. Commanders give their subordinate commanders specific guidance on the initial positioning of forces. Commanders ensure the synchronization of subordinate units' defensive plans and that control measures, such as contact points and phase lines, enable subordinate commanders and prevent fratricide. If subordinate unit commanders prepare their defensive plans in isolation, assailable flanks between subordinate units could easily develop. Commanders are responsible for fires and movement planning between the positions of their subordinate units. Planning an area defense. The key to a successful area defense is the integration and synchronization of all available assets. The general defensive planning considerations addressed in Chapter 8 apply to the area defense. They assign missions, allocate forces, and apportion functional and multifunctional support and sustainment resources. Commanders decide where to concentrate their efforts and where to take risks. They can rapidly redirect attack aviation and field artillery systems initially allocated to supporting efforts to support their main effort at the appropriate time. Units organize their forces differently for contiguous and non-contiguous assigned areas. Commanders describe their concept of operations in sufficient detail so that their staffs and subordinate commanders understand precisely how commanders intend to fight their battles. Commanders ensure the coordination of maneuver and supporting actions among subordinates. Commanders' keys to successful area defense include concentrating effects, depth of the defensive area, security, taking full advantage of the terrain, flexibility of defensive actions, timely resumption of offensive actions. Units organize their defensive efforts based on their analysis of the mission variables and their higher echelon commander's concept. They decide where to concentrate their efforts and how to economize forces. Initial friendly actions force enemy units to enter established engagement areas. Friendly forces regain the initiative from enemy forces when they successfully perform their area defense. They take advantage of available offensive opportunities that do not risk the integrity of their defenses. Sustainment units in an area defense require a careful balance among establishing forward supply stocks of petroleum, oils and lubricants, barrier material, and ammunition in adequate amounts to support defending units. These units avoid having so many supplies located in forward locations that units cannot rapidly move them to counter or avoid enemy advances. Commanders can lawfully obtain from local civilian infrastructure any suitable petroleum, oils and lubricants, barrier material, construction equipment, and laborers which will reduce the defending unit's transportation requirements. Proper forecasting of supply and support requirements is important to the success of the area defense. Likewise, units forward deploy maintenance and medical support with their associated repair parts and medical supplies. Those systems and soldiers or equipment that cannot return quickly to the battle are rapidly evacuated from forward defensive positions to avoid unduly burdening medical and maintenance elements. Position selection. Successful units carefully design their defense plan to ensure they can halt enemy attacks and develop opportunities to seize the initiative and resume offensive operations. The cohesion of defending forces significantly affects the overall effectiveness of the area defense. Units prepare to adjust their defensive dispositions to meet changes in the enemy's dispositions to maintain that cohesion. The area defense requires units in defensive positions to accomplish their mission independently or in combination by defeating enemy forces by fire, absorbing the strength of the attack within their positions, or destroying enemy forces with local counterattacks. Units combine the advantages of fighting from prepared positions, obstacles, planned fires, and local counterattacks to isolate and overwhelm selected enemy formations. They rapidly shift the purpose and location of their main effort throughout their assigned areas as conditions change. Commanders may have to reposition defending units within their defensive positions or reposition between terrain features to mask the effects of overwhelming fires against attacking enemy units. The defensive plans designate axes of advance and routes for the commitment or movement of their reserves or the forward or rearward passage of one unit through another. Those plans identify air axes for aerial maneuver by attack aviation elements, air assault units, or fixed-wing aircraft. Their operations processes identify decision points associated with the initiation of these counterattacks, the repositioning of forces, and other actions. The capability to reposition relies on defending forces having tactical mobility. Defending forces stay in their prepared positions and accept the possibility of becoming decisively engaged if they lack this mobility advantage. Commanders assigning defensive missions define their defended areas. They have to accept gaps and conduct non-contiguous operations when defending on broad fronts with minimal forces. This results in a non-contiguous flot. Defending shallow assigned areas requires units to operate well forward with a corresponding reduction in their flexibility. The ideal area defense is one where effective mutual support exists throughout the width and depth of the defender's tactical positions. Units organize and occupy defensive positions based on their natural defensive strength. Defending units maintain tactical integrity within their defensive areas. Units conducting an area defense normally address flank security requirements by assigning those responsibilities to subordinate elements or organizing a separate security force to perform that task. Units typically have two methods for the placement of their positions when conducting an area defense: defense in depth and forward defense. A higher echelon commander may dictate the method to their subordinates, or subordinates may retain the flexibility to choose the method of an area defense. These two methods are not exclusionary. Part of a defending unit can conduct a forward defense while the other part conducts a defense in depth. Defense in depth. Units normally prefer to perform a defense in depth. Forces defending in depth absorb the momentum of enemy attacks by making enemy forces attack repeatedly through a series of mutually supporting positions. Building these positions requires significant time and engineer support to increase the survivability and countermobility of those positions. Depth gives fire support assets time to deliver effects on multiple locations against selected elements of the attacking enemy force. Depth provides more reaction time for defending forces to respond by repositioning or counterattacking. Units continuously employ their information collection assets to gather additional information about the attacking enemy's intentions and capabilities between the time combat starts and the time the enemy commits to a COA. Depth reduces the risk of enemy forces rapidly penetrating the MBA along unexpected directions. Units also employ a defense in depth when enemy forces can employ large quantities of indirect fires. Units disperse their forces throughout their assigned area when conducting a defense in depth. They take area damage control measures to reduce the effects of these munitions and weapons on defending friendly forces, and they deny enemy forces lucrative targets. The degree of dispersal adopted by defending forces is a function of the enemy and friendly forces' capabilities, as well as the terrain to rapidly concentrate combat power at decisive points. Commanders can position their defending units in successive layers of BPs along likely enemy avenues of approach when conducting a defense in depth. Commanders usually decide to conduct a defense in depth when their defensive missions are not restrictive and allow them to operate throughout the depths of their assigned areas. The terrain within their assigned areas does not favor a forward defense, and there is better defensible terrain deeper within their assigned areas. There is significant depth available, allowing the trading of space for time. The cover and concealment on or near the FIBA is limited. Large units, such as divisions or corps, employing a defense in depth can conduct an area defense on a wider frontage than they can if they adopt a forward defense. This is because a forward defense has no time or maneuver space to reposition forces. A defense in depth allows units to use security forces in the forward part of their MBA to identify the enemy force's main effort and control the depth of the enemy force's penetration into their MBA. By their defensive actions, these forces provide units with time to react to enemy actions and allow defending units to take offensive steps to eliminate enemy options, such as conducting counterattacks into the flanks of advancing enemy forces. Forward defense. When units defend forward within their assigned areas, they organize their forces so they can commit most of their available combat power early in their defensive efforts. To accomplish this, units may deploy their forces forward in their respective assigned areas or plan counterattacks well forward in the MBA or even beyond the MBA. Units can conduct their main effort from forward defensive positions near the FIBA in a forward defense. Units concentrate significant portions of their available combat power toward engagement areas located along their FIBA. The intent is to prevent significant enemy penetrations into their defensive areas. Units conduct forward defense operations to retain these positions along their FIBA and counterattack any enemy penetrations. However, the defending force's lack of depth may allow enemy forces to exploit success if they penetrate the friendly force's main defensive positions. Commanders may choose to conduct a forward defense when the best defensive positions, natural obstacles, and natural engagement areas are located along the FIBA. Cover and concealment in the rear portion of their assigned areas are limited. The higher commander directs them to retain forward terrain. The terrain in the assigned area does not support a mobile defense. The enemy has superior mobility. Positioning the reserve. Defending units have the ability to seize the initiative by counterattacking over familiar ground to destroy halted or disorganized enemy forces. Their reserve is a key component of these counterattacks. Defending units protect their counterattacking forces by employing overwatching fires from friendly positions. Commanders direct counterattacks against an enemy force's exposed rear or flanks whenever possible. Units expend significant effort during the planning process to ensure the effective use of their reserves. They may locate their reserves within their assigned areas where those reserves can employ existing road networks. Those road networks allow the rapid displacement of these reserves throughout their assigned areas in response to different opportunities or contingencies. Commanders have more flexibility and can take greater risk in employing their reserves if their higher echelon headquarters has not committed its reserve. See Chapter 1 for more information on general considerations for positioning the reserve. Spoiling attacks and counterattacks. Units do not wait for the enemy to initiate an attack when developing their defensive plans. They seek opportunities to conduct spoiling attacks and counterattacks against enemy forces. Units execute spoiling attacks and local counterattacks to disrupt the enemy's attack preparations and buy time and maneuver space for defensive preparations. In an area defense, units plan major counterattacks as a branch or sequel to the main defensive operation. A spoiling attack preempts or disrupts an enemy force's ability to launch an attack, while a counterattack prevents an enemy force from exploiting successes. The forces conducting either variation of attack need to be capable to develop the situation, defend themselves, and force the enemy to react. This allows friendly forces to place the enemy's attack plan at risk. Refer to Chapter 5 for more information on spoiling attacks and counterattacks. Preparation considerations for an area defense. When planning for an area defense, units focus their collection activities on confirming templated enemy courses of action, identifying favorable terrain for the defense, and answering the commander's critical information requirements. Information obtained from those activities may or may not cause units to refine their plans. Defensive preparations allow time for any necessary additional coordination and synchronization among different headquarters. They also allow for the conduct of those supporting efforts that fall within their defensive capabilities and OPSEC guidelines. Defending units may have to commit substantial forces to security operations or conduct spoiling attacks if they know that enemy forces will attack before they finish their defensive preparations. Units normally establish an area defense after they complete the deployment process of force projection, complete their offensive actions, or are in assembly areas. Commanders issue warning orders stating the mission and identifying any special considerations. While subordinate units complete their current missions, unit staffs perform detailed planning. Staffs coordinate for the pre-positioning of ammunition and barrier material in secure areas near the unit's projected defensive positions before starting the operation. Upon receiving initial mission orders, defending units establish a local security posture and occupy hide positions in sector before beginning defensive preparations. Security forces immediately assume their security mission and prepare positions simultaneously. Commanders conduct reconnaissance of their defensive areas and establish forward security areas before their units occupy their defensive positions. Units may pre-position supplies, such as ammunition and barrier materiel, once they can secure those positions and supplies. The mission variables are the deciding consideration in establishing priorities. Those priorities can include establishing local security and deploying security forces, emplacing communications assets to support the unit's primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency communications for each primary, supplemental, and alternative positions. Establishing contact points with any adjacent units so that their commanders can coordinate and synchronize their defensive efforts. Identifying engagement areas where commanders seek to engage and destroy enemy forces. emplacing obstacles and surveying indirect fire targets to support these obstacles, positioning key weapon systems to engage into engagement areas and cover obstacles, planning fire control measures such as TRPs, trigger lines, and FPFs to support these engagement areas, positioning the reserve, designating and appropriately clearing fields of fire, preparing primary fighting positions based on the anticipated fighting conditions, such as the time of day and weather conditions, providing concealment and camouflage for fighting and survivability positions as they are constructed, positioning observers who can see both targets and trigger lines, positioning any available critical friendly zones over friendly positions by establishing sensor coverage and direct communications links between sensors and shooters, installing limited visibility aids such as thermal hotspots and chemical lights on TRPs, updating range cards and sector sketches as required, preparing alternate fighting positions, designating and preparing supplementary positions, designating hide positions and rehearsing movements to and from all fighting positions. Units may place their vehicles in hide positions at any time while preparing the defensive position. Improving trafficability of projected counterattack routes. Pre-stocking ammunition in positions where it can survive anticipated enemy preparation fires. Positioning barrier material for constructing fighting positions and obstacles. Rehearsing movements under daylight and limited visibility conditions. Establishing sleep and rest plans. Continuing to improve the defense. Survivability positions enhance the strength of a defensive position by providing soldiers and weapon systems with specified degrees of cover from enemy fires. Units initiate construction of survivability positions based on their priorities of work, and they continue to build and improve them until the last possible moment. The degree of overhead, frontal, and side protection provided varies with the location of the sheltered troops and enemy capabilities. Defending units improve communications routes throughout their defensive positions to ease movement of supplies and forces as time and resources allow. Communications routes are particularly important for reserves. Units establish tactical communications with their various subordinate elements and off-site antennas to reduce their electromagnetic signature. Defending units rehearse how they move to and from primary, alternate, supplementary, and sequential positions. These rehearsals establish the time necessary to conduct these movements under different environmental conditions. Units modify their existing defensive plans based on the results of these rehearsals and changes in the mission variables. They check that the routes taken during these rehearsals do not show obvious signs of heavy use. These steps can include the conduct of only dismounted rehearsals, only moving one vehicle per platoon, and taking steps to eliminate signs of movement, such as sweeping snow back over the tracks made during the rehearsal. Commanders ensure close coordination among their subordinates. One way to do this during the preparation phase is for them to take their subordinate commanders to vantage points in the MBA if such sites are available. They can conduct rehearsals and finalize coordination from those positions. This technique also helps commanders transmit their intent and share their situational understanding. The location, composition, and movement of echelon reserves are typically essential elements of friendly information. Other typical essential elements of friendly information in the defense include location of main obstacle belts, location of critical countermobility assets, indirect fire assets, and supply points. Enemy reconnaissance focuses on finding these reserves and reporting when and where they commit. Units integrate sustainment into their maneuver rehearsals to verify that routes for support do not cross or conflict with routes used by their reserves or other maneuver elements. They balance the use of ammunition and other supply caches against their ability to secure those caches. Units also ensure the availability of alternate lines of communications and MSRs to support their contingency plans and changes in tactical situations. Units ensure the integration of available combat enablers into their plans. During this phase, commanders verify that their subordinate commanders and other leaders have a shared understanding of their plans and can execute them with minimal guidance. One technique that commanders use to ensure subordinate understanding is the receipt of back briefs from their subordinates after they issue their orders. Execution considerations for an area defense. In an area defense, units use various techniques and procedures to accomplish their missions. Defending forces repeatedly seek to force the enemy to maneuver into engagement areas where they can target them. Defending forces operate mainly from prepared, protected positions to concentrate combat power against attempted enemy breakthroughs and flanking movements. Units use their mobile forces to cover gaps between their defensive positions, reinforce those positions as necessary, and counterattack to seal penetrations or block enemy attempts at flanking movements. The mission variables, most importantly time, determine how closely units can synchronize their supporting efforts with their main efforts. Units conduct supporting efforts designed to regain the initiative by limiting an attacking enemy force's options and disrupting an enemy force's plan. Supporting efforts prevent enemy forces from massing and creating windows of opportunity for the conduct of the main effort. This allows defending forces to defeat attacking enemy forces in detail. Units also employ supporting efforts to disrupt enemy operations by attacking enemy command posts at critical stages in a battle or by striking and eliminating key enemy elements and capabilities. This could be river crossing equipment and supplies in regions that contain numerous unfordable rivers. Reconnaissance and security operations are normally components of the echelon's shaping operations and supporting efforts. Gaining and maintaining enemy contact in the face of an enemy force's determined efforts to destroy friendly information collection assets is vital to the success of defensive actions. As an enemy force's attack begins, defending units strive to identify the locations and capabilities of committed enemy units to determine the enemy's intent and direction of attack and to gain time to react. Initially, defending units accomplish these goals in their security areas. The sources of this type of intelligence include reconnaissance and security forces, intelligence units, special operations forces, and aviation elements. Battalions and companies are increasingly able to access combat information provided by technical means belonging to higher echelons, such as UAS and signals intelligence, to provide the required reaction time. Units ensure the distribution of a COP throughout their forces during the battle as a basis for subordinate commanders' actions. Units use the information available in conjunction with military judgment to determine the point at which enemy forces commit to a given COA. Units' security forces seek to disrupt enemy reconnaissance forces and mask dispositions, capabilities, and intent of their defending forces. This occurs simultaneously with friendly information collection assets helping to determine an enemy force's chosen COA. Ideally, security area engagements cause enemy forces to conduct a movement to contact against friendly prepared defenses. Security forces use every opportunity to gain information, delay, and disrupt the enemy. Their commanders prepare to pass through or around MBA forces as quickly as possible by using multiple passage points, gaps, or lanes along the FIBA as the security forces displaces. This usually occurs in one location at a time until all security forces complete their retrograde. However, the security force may pass in sequence based on enemy pressure. Transfer of responsibility occurs forward of the FIBA at the BHL. Security forces make any required last-minute coordination with MBA forces at contact points to ensure their rapid passage through the MBA. Variations of the area defense. The variations of the area defense have unique conditions and their own planning considerations. The three variations of area defense are defense of a linear obstacle, perimeter defense, reverse slope defense. When determining their variation of the area defense, units decide the location of defensible terrain within their assigned areas based on terrain characteristics and their estimate of the enemy force's chosen COA. Those terrain characteristics include terrain relief patterns, avenues of approach into and within the assigned areas, the location of any key or decisive terrain, and existing obstacles and choke points, including rivers and fording sites. The other mission variables also influence this decision. Defense of a linear obstacle. units may conduct a variation of an area defense along or behind a linear obstacle. Linear obstacles, such as mountain ranges or rivers, generally favor a forward defense. The planning, preparation, and execution of a defense of a linear obstacle is not different than any other area defense. The main difference is that the defense focuses on the linear natural or man-made obstacle as opposed to a separate key terrain feature, such as an urban area or hill. A defending force seeks to defeat any enemy forces attempting to seize a bridgehead across a linear obstacle. Local defending units immediately counterattack any enemy bridgeheads to destroy enemy forces located within the bridgehead, while higher echelons attempt to isolate enemy bridgehead sites. If an enemy force seizes a bridgehead and strikes out rapidly, it could quickly penetrate the defending force. An enemy penetration requires units to conduct either a counterattack, delay, or a withdrawal. It is extremely difficult to deploy in strength along the entire length of a linear obstacle. Defending units must conduct economy of force measures in some areas. In an area defense, units' use of a defense in depth accepts the possibility that enemy forces may conduct a crossing at a given point. The depth of the defense should prevent an enemy force from rapidly exploiting its success. It also diffuses the enemy force's combat power by causing enemy forces to contain bypassed friendly defensive positions in addition to continuing to attack friendly positions in greater depth. Once the enemy force secures several bridgeheads, the defending force moves to contain them. Defending commanders may choose not to counterattack until they can mass overwhelming combat power. They will probably choose to eliminate the bridgeheads sequentially in this case. However, defenders risk allowing enemy forces to establish and fortify bridgeheads and crossing sites to the extent that a counterattack force is unable to eliminate them. Perimeter defense. Units may employ the perimeter defense as a variation when conducting an area defense when the unit is required to orient on all directions. They also use it in other circumstances, such as when 360-degree security is required when taking a temporary halt during a troop movement. The prerequisites for a successful perimeter defense are aggressive patrolling and security operations outside the perimeter. A unit within the perimeter can perform these activities, or another force, such as the territorial defense forces of a local nation in which hostilities occur, can perform them. A unit can organize a perimeter defense to accomplish a specific mission, such as protecting a fire base or providing immediate self-protection, such as during resupply operations when all-around security is required. Commanders establish a perimeter when a unit must hold key terrain, such as a strong point, or when it must defend itself in non-contiguous areas where a unit cannot tie its defense in with adjacent units. This occurs when a unit is operating behind enemy lines or when it is securing an isolated objective, such as a bridge, mountain pass, or airfield. Bypassed or isolated friendly forces also need to form a perimeter to allow them to defend in place. Forces located within the confines of a base or base cluster in their echelon support also need to establish a perimeter defense. A major characteristic of a perimeter defense is a secure inner area with most of the combat power located on the perimeter. Another characteristic is the ease of access for resupply operations. Units coordinate direct and indirect fire plans to prevent accidentally engaging neighboring friendly units and non-combatants. Normally, the reserve centrally locates to react to a penetration of the perimeter at any point. Perimeters vary in shape depending on the terrain and situation. Units may reinforce those most vulnerable parts of their perimeter with additional resources once they determine the most probable direction of enemy attack. The perimeter shape conforms to the terrain features that best use friendly observation and fields of fire. Units can increase the effectiveness of a perimeter by tying it into a natural obstacle, such as a river, which allows a defending unit to concentrate its combat power in more threatened areas. Organization of forces. A perimeter defense has no special organization of forces. They organize in the traditional reconnaissance and security force, main body, and reserve. Units may employ all defending forces forward along a perimeter or establish a defense in depth within a perimeter. They employ patrols, raids, ambushes, air attacks, and supporting fires to harass and destroy enemy forces before they make contact with the perimeter, thus providing defense in depth with both techniques. In a forward defense, commanders place all subordinate units in positions along the perimeter. A battalion commander could divide the perimeter into subordinate unit-assigned areas with boundaries and contact points. This method reduces the possibility of fratricide and friendly fire incidents within the perimeter and maximizes combat power on the perimeter. Constructing an outer and inner perimeter, creating defensive depth, is a technique of a defense in depth. Commanders position forces within a perimeter to decrease the possibility of an enemy force simultaneously suppressing the inner and outer perimeter forces with the same fires. Friendly forces within the perimeter provide mutual support. In open terrain, they cover gaps on the outer perimeter between units with fires. They do not allow gaps between defensive fighting positions when the unit is in restrictive terrain with restricted fields of fire and observation. This may mean that a unit defends along a narrower frontage than on more open terrain. Commanders may also have to employ all subordinate units on the line formed by the perimeter. Units ensure that outer perimeter positions have rearward protection from inner perimeter weapons if an inner perimeter is established. Units can assign combat vehicles supporting defense firing positions on the perimeter to cover the most likely mounted avenues of approach. Based on their mobility, combat vehicles can also form the unit's reserve. Vehicle commanders select and prepare alternate and supplemental firing positions and routes to and from them. If a perimeter has several mounted avenues of approach leading to it, units may elect to hold combat vehicles in hide positions until an enemy force approaches. Units prepare routes, firing positions, and range cards for all positions. Small unit leaders must ensure that vehicles do not destroy communications wires when vehicles move from one position to another. The need to hold or protect terrain features, such as bridges, airfields, or landing zones, from enemy observation and fires may restrict the positioning of units within a perimeter. These factors, as well as the inability to achieve depth, make a perimeter defense vulnerable to penetration by heavy enemy forces. Units reduce these vulnerabilities by developing information collection plans that provide early warning, positioning anti-armor systems on restrictive terrain to concentrate fires on armor approaches, providing as much depth as the diameter of the perimeter to allow the proper placement of security elements and the reserve and the designation of secondary sectors of fire for anti-armor weapons, constructing obstacles to fix or block enemy forces so friendly units can effectively engage them, using obscurance and military deception. If isolation from other friendly units drives commanders to form a perimeter, such as when conducting echelon support area security or when encircled, functional and multifunctional support and sustainment elements from other units may seek to take advantage of that perimeter's protection. The base commander gives these elements defensive missions based on their capabilities within the base formed by the perimeter. Units coordinate and integrate any fire support provided from outside the perimeter into the overall defensive plan. This extra fire support conserves the ammunition of units within the perimeter. Units normally employ reconnaissance assets, such as a scout platoon, outside the perimeter to provide early warning. They augment perimeter security with squad-sized or smaller observation posts forward of the perimeter, provided and controlled by units positioned along that perimeter. These security elements position to observe avenues of approach. Patrols examine areas not under observation by stationary elements. Any security forces operating outside the perimeter coordinate their passage of lines into and out of the perimeter with the appropriate perimeter units. The reserve may be a designated unit or a provisional force organized from available personnel and equipment. The reserve forms a second line of defense behind the perimeter forces. Ideally, the reserve is mobile enough to react to enemy action along any part of the perimeter. Units position the reserve to block the most dangerous avenue of approach and assigns on-order positions on other critical avenues. They may task combat vehicles initially occupying firing positions on the perimeter with the mission of reinforcing the reserve. Control measures. Commanders in a perimeter defense used control measures to designate the trace of the perimeter, BPs, contact points, and lateral and forward boundaries. They can use engagement areas, EAs, target reference points, TRPs, final protective fires, FPFs, and principal direction of fire as fire control measures. Units designate checkpoints, contact points, passage points, and passage routes for use by local reconnaissance, surveillance, and security elements operating outside the perimeter boundary. Planning a perimeter defense. Defending units position their forces and plan fire and movement so they can respond to the widest possible range of enemy actions. Defending commanders, assisted by their staffs, prepare plans, including counterattack plans. Units rehearse, evaluate, and revise their plans as needed. The availability of landing and drop zones protected from enemy observation and fire is a major consideration when selecting and organizing the perimeter defense. Units must emphasize supply economy and protect existing supply stocks since aerial resupply is vulnerable to weather and enemy fires. The mission variables considered when commanders and staffs developed their counterattack plans as branches or sequels to their defensive plans may not correspond exactly with the situation when the moment comes to execute those counterattacks. Units reassess and revise their counterattack plans based on their revised situational understanding as their defenses unfold. This revised understanding results from an updated common operational picture as new intelligence and combat information becomes available to answer these questions. Is a counterattack feasible, or should commanders use the reserve to contain enemy successes? When and where should defending forces counterattack? What parts of the defending force should counterattack? What should defending forces block or contain in the case of successful enemy penetrations? Is there enough time to complete the counterattack before the arrival of enemy follow-on forces? Can commanders conduct their counterattack using only available fires, or must ground maneuver forces be committed? Use of terrain. Proper evaluation and organization of an area's terrain are essential to maximize the effectiveness of a force conducting perimeter defense. Units consider natural defensive characteristics of the terrain. Using artificial obstacles to enhance the natural defensive characteristics of the terrain. Existing roads, railways, and waterways used for military locks and civilian commerce. Controlled land areas surrounding the perimeter to a range beyond that of enemy mortars and rockets. Security. An effective security requires early warnings. Early warnings of pending enemy actions allow units the time to react to any threat. Combat outposts, patrols, sensors, target acquisition radars, and aerial surveillance provide early warning. Civil information, human intelligence, and observed changes in a population's pattern of life near the position are excellent indicators of pending enemy actions. Security measures vary with the enemy threat, forces available, and the other mission variables. However, all-around security is essential. Mutual support. Units position defending forces to ensure mutual employment of defensive resources, such as crew-served weapons, observation, and maneuver elements. Mutual support between defensive elements requires careful planning, positioning, and coordination because of the circular aspects of the perimeter defense. They use surveillance, obstacles, prearranged indirect fires, and maneuver elements to exploit or reinforce fires to control any gaps in the perimeter. Defensive plans provide for using all available support, including indirect fire, attack helicopters, and fixed-wing aircraft. All-around defense. In defensive planning, units prepare to defend against an enemy attack from any direction and designate the unit defending the most likely enemy avenue of approach the main effort. They employ flexible plans and position their reserve to react to any threat. They commit maneuver elements and supporting weapons to detect, engage, and destroy an attacking enemy force. Commanders assign defensive positions and sectors of fire to all personnel within the perimeter. Defense in depth. alternate, subsequent, and supplementary positions, combat outposts, and mutually supporting strong points forward of the perimeter extend the depth of a defense. Units plan fires to the maximum range throughout a defensive area. They may place protective obstacles around critical locations within the perimeter during periods of reduced visibility to disrupt the enemy's plan and add depth to the defense. Responsiveness. An attacking enemy force has the advantage of deciding when, where, and with what force to attack. Defending units prepare plans, including counterattack plans, and rehearse, assess, and revise them as necessary. The defensive plan contains procedures for timely responses by fire support teams and maneuver forces. Maximum use of offensive action. Since the objective of a perimeter defense is to maintain a secure position, units use offensive actions to engage enemy forces outside the perimeter. On initial occupation of a perimeter, friendly forces take offensive actions to destroy enemy forces in the immediate area. Once the perimeter area is clear, a relatively smaller force can defend the perimeter, thereby releasing other forces for other operations. Units employ patrols, raids, ambushes, aerial attacks, and supporting fires to harass and destroy enemy forces to prevent them from threatening the perimeter. They maintain constant communications and a COP with subordinates within the perimeter. Commanders direct their subordinates to conduct appropriate actions to remove threats located within their assigned areas and sectors of fire. Executing a perimeter defense. Attacks against a perimeter may range from long-range sniper, mortar, rocket fire, or attacks by suicide demolition squads to attacks by major enemy ground and air forces. Mortars, artillery, tanks, and anti-armor missile systems from within the perimeter engage enemy forces at long ranges. As an attack comes within small arms range, other weapons on the perimeter engage enemy forces. If the assault continues, the defending force employs its FPFs. If enemy forces penetrate the perimeter, the reserve blocks the penetration or counterattacks to restore the perimeter. After committing the initial reserve, commanders reconstitute another reserve to meet other threats. This force normally comes from an unengaged unit on a different portion of the perimeter. If commanders use an unengaged force to constitute a new reserve, they must retain sufficient forces to defend the vacated sector, unless the situation forces commanders to assume that degree of risk. Sustainment elements may provide support from within the perimeter or from outside locations, depending on the mission and the status of the unit providing the defensive perimeter, type of transport available, weather, and terrain. Commanders often sustain units in contested areas without secure ground locks by air. Find the enemy. This typically occurs once friendly security forces make initial enemy contact. The security force does not idly await the arrival of the enemy. They take an active role as part of the information collection activities to find the enemy and understand their location, disposition, strength, and course of action. The security force also conducts counter-reconnaissance against enemy reconnaissance and intelligence assets. Destroying these assets allows units to force enemy units to deploy into formations on the ground of those commanders choosing, thus helping to disrupt and desynchronize the enemy force's plan. This also prevents the enemy from understanding the composition and disposition of the main effort of the defense and forces the enemy to attack into an unknown situation. Fix the enemy. Units do everything possible to limit an enemy force's options when conducting an area defense. They conduct supporting efforts to constrain the enemy into specific COAs, control enemy movements, or fix enemy forces in given locations. Units continue to find, delay, or attrit enemy forces for follow-on and reserve to keep them from entering the MBA when executing these operations. Units have several options to help fix attacking enemy forces. They can design supporting efforts, such as securing the flanks and point of a penetration, to fix enemy forces and allow friendly forces to execute decisive maneuver elsewhere. Combat outposts and strong points can also deny enemy forces movement to or through a location. Units use obstacles to fix, turn, block, or disrupt to limit the enemy force's options. Properly executed obstacles result from top-down and bottom-up obstacle planning and emplacement. Blocking forces can also affect enemy movement. A blocking force may achieve its mission from a variety of positions depending on the mission variables. Finish the enemy. The main effort occurs in the MBA in an area defense. This is where the effects of supporting efforts coupled with sustaining operations combine with the main effort of the main body forces to defeat enemy forces. Commanders' goals are to prevent enemy forces from further advances by using a combination of fires from prepared positions, obstacles, and mobile reserves. Generating massed effects is especially critical to units conducting the defense of large areas against enemy forces with significant advantages in combat power. An attacking enemy force has the ability to select the point and time of attack. Therefore, an attacking enemy force can mass forces at specific points, thus dramatically influencing the ratio of forces at these points of attack. Defending units quickly determine their enemy force's intent and the effects of terrain. This allows defending units and their weapon systems to concentrate the effects of combat power against enemy forces at those points and restore a more favorable force ratio. Units carefully plan and coordinate the withdrawal of their forward security forces through MBA forward positions. MBA forces assume responsibility for a battle at the BHL. Units may find it necessary to increase the intensity of the direct and indirect fire support they provide to these forward security forces. This support allows those security forces to break direct contact with an enemy force as they approach the BHL and FIBA and conduct a rearward passage of lines. Units may also employ obscuration to assist in the retrograde maneuver of their security forces. Units guard rearward passage lanes in obstacle complexes left for the withdrawal of their security forces and arrange for closing those lanes after the passage of those forces. MBA forces provide other support as required to assist the withdrawal of these security forces. Attacking enemy forces try to find vulnerabilities and passage points after they reach the MBA, possibly by conducting a series of probing attacks. Defending units engage enemy-led forces as these attacks develop. Defending units select and reinforce terrain to canalize attacking enemy forces and limit the available maneuver space. This limited maneuver space tends to slow enemy advances and cause enemy formations to compress with resulting increased force densities. These conditions favor the employment of defensive fires and air support. Defending units employ simultaneous and sequential fires to impose the maximum possible enemy losses at this stage of a battle. Subordinate elements maneuver using massed direct and indirect fire and movement to gain positional advantage over assaulting enemy forces. Commanders also direct engineer obstacle and sustainment efforts by assigning priorities. They reposition forces to meet enemy forces where they actually are, rather than where they projected enemy forces would be. Commanders direct operations and support subordinate elements by providing the necessary functional and multifunctional support and sustainment assets. They control the commitment of their reserves. Units engage enemy follow-on forces with long-range rockets and air support at division echelons and above. Units can defeat an echeloned enemy's attack in detail, one echelon at a time, if they can delay the entry of enemy follow-on forces into the MBA. This is because disrupting the enemy force's timetable can lead to the creation of exploitable gaps between the enemy forces committed and subsequent echelons. Gaps between defensive positions may be necessary within the MBA due to a lack of defending forces. Units do not leave gaps in or near points where they project enemy forces will commit their main effort. Units continue to observe these gaps and cover them with their available fires. Where possible, units block these gaps by emplacing obstacles or moving in friendly forces. Commanders clearly define responsibilities for dealing with each enemy penetration. They take steps to block enemy MBA penetrations and destroy any penetrating enemy forces as soon as possible. This usually requires the employment of friendly reserves. Units may need to extend defensive actions within the depth of their assigned areas to counter enemy penetrations not stopped farther forward. Units do not allow attacking enemy forces to consolidate on any newly won objectives unless this fits in their operational concepts for the defense. Generally, units conduct local counterattacks with available local resources to prevent enemy forces from consolidating on those objectives. The smallest possible units conduct these local counterattacks. However, commanders remain aware of the need to avoid piecemeal commitment. Units do not abandon their positions unless this action aligns with their higher echelon commander's intent or that higher echelon commander grants them permission to do so. Defending forces contain enemy penetrations if they are unable to repulse enemy forces until they can act in concert with major counterattacking forces. Units orchestrate their counterattacks with the effects of all their elements of combat power, such as their supporting fire support systems. Units employ all available resources necessary to ensure success when counterattacking. Their reserves counterattack usually becomes their main effort on their commitment. One of commanders' most critical decisions is the commitment of their reserve. Therefore, commanders avoid premature or piecemeal commitment of reserves. Commanders may reinforce their reserves before commitment to give them greater capabilities to counter enemy action. Units do not counterattack as an automatic reaction to an enemy penetration, nor do commanders commit reserves solely because enemy forces reach a certain phase line or other location. Units may employ fire support assets and local counterattacks by forces already defending to destroy, disrupt, or attrit enemy penetrations, thus avoiding the need to commit reserves. Units launch their counterattacks when enemy forces present their flanks, overextend, or the enemy force's momentum dissipates. Units can target counterattacks to isolate and destroy selected enemy forces within the MBA once they can identify the flanks of the enemy force's main effort. Sometimes, commanders may determine that their reserves are unable to conduct successful counterattacks. Units use their available resources to block, contain, or delay enemy forces in this situation. This gains time for the employment of higher echelon reserves. Commanders and staffs adjust their existing defensive plans to integrate these high echelon reserves into their defensive and counterattack schemes. Units adjust boundaries and designate additional BPs for occupation. They plan the routes units will use and any necessary adjustments to existing command and support relationships. They can speed the process of positioning and moving these reserves by designating routes, allocating mobility assets, and providing traffic control personnel and guides at designated contact points to lead and brief them on the situation. Units employ maneuver battalion scouts, military police, and cavalry units to provide traffic control during the movement of these reserves because they have the combat power to protect themselves from those small enemy forces that units may encounter in this situation. Follow-through. Defensive actions aim to retain terrain and create conditions for a counteroffensive that regains the initiative. The area defense does this by causing enemy forces to sustain unacceptable losses before reaching their objectives. Upon defeating the enemy attack, commanders have a decision to make. They can consolidate, reorganize, and begin the counterattack. They can consolidate and reorganize and prepare to defend again. If they are unable to defeat the enemy attack, they need to transition to a retrograde. Any decision to withdraw must account for the current situation in adjacent defensive areas. Only the higher echelon commander who ordered the defense can designate a new FIBA or authorize a retrograde operation. No matter what option is chosen, units must continue to conduct medevac and casevac, battle damage assessment and repair, detainee operations, and begin setting conditions for the branch or sequel to their defense. Reverse slope defense. For a reverse slope defense, units organize their defense on the portion of a terrain feature or slope with a topographical crest that masks the main defensive positions from enemy observation and direct fire. All or part of the defending force may employ this technique. It is generally useful at lower tactical echelons, such as battalion and below. Units base a successful reverse slope defense on denying enemy forces the topographical crest. Although a defender may not occupy a crest in strength, controlling the crest by fire is essential for success. Controlling the crest reduces the effects of indirect fire, mortar, artillery, and close air support, and draws the battle into small arms range. Units use a reverse slope defense to provide a defending force an opportunity to gain surprise. Their goal is to make enemy forces commit forces against the forward slope of the defense, causing enemy forces to attack in an uncoordinated fashion across the exposed topographical crest. Firing from covered and concealed positions throughout the battle area, the defending force maintains a distinct advantage over the exposed enemy forces and canalizes them through unfamiliar terrain into engagement areas. Units choose to conduct a reverse slope defense when the crest and forward slope are untenable because the enemy force enjoys a quantitative or qualitative advantage in firepower at that point. Enemy forces cannot depress enough to engage friendly forces. The crest and forward slope offer little or no cover and concealment. The forward slope has been lost to enemy action or not seized. Mutual support by flank units can adequately cover the forward slope. Variance in the friendly force's tactical pattern is advisable to deceive or surprise enemy forces. Forced to assume a hasty defense while in contact with or close to enemy forces. A reverse slope defense may deceive enemy forces regarding the true location and organization of its main defensive positions. This defense protects the main defensive positions from preparation fires and causes enemy forces to deploy into assault formations prematurely. The forward crest of the main defensive positions limits the enemy forces' observation. It reduces the effectiveness of enemy indirect fires and close air support, rendering the enemy forces' direct fire weapons ineffective. The defending force may surprise enemy forces as they crest the high ground, engaging them with massed fires. Units on the reverse slope have more freedom of movement until the crest is lost. The reverse slope defense also removes any direct fire standoff advantage the enemy may have. However, using a reverse slope defense has several disadvantages. The effective range of direct fire weapons may be limited. Once security elements withdraw, enemy forces can advance largely unimpeded until attacking elements crest the high ground in front of the main defensive positions. The enemy force has the advantage of attacking downhill. Maintaining observation of the enemy force is difficult. In some cases, units can cover obstacles only from positions on the forward slope. Organizations of forces. Commanders task organize their forces to give each unit enough combat power to accomplish its mission once their schemes of maneuver are determined. A unit conducting a reverse slope defense normally task organize their forces into a security force, a main body, and a reserve. Units position the security force where they can observe the forward slope, the terrain forward of it, and other approaches to the defending position. Security elements destroy enemy reconnaissance assets, delay enemy forces, disorganize the enemy forces' attack, and deceive enemy forces regarding the exact location of the main defense. They position information collection assets and observation posts near or forward of the topographical crest to provide long-range observation of both the enemy forces' flanks and front. An observation post may vary in size from a two-man team to a rifle squad or to a multiple combat vehicle section in each position. Units employ sufficient forces to provide observation and usually a screen for the MBA. During periods of reduced visibility, units should increase the numbers and sizes of these detachments to provide security against infiltration or unexpected attack. Aggressive night combat patrols and ambushes are an essential part of the security process. To achieve surprise and limit an enemy force's ability to maneuver, units organize the main body into defensive positions to mass fires on attacking enemy forces as they cross the topographic crest. In a reverse slope defense, The key position denies enemy penetration and supports forward elements by fire. The defending force maintains observation and fires over the entire forward slope as long as possible to destroy enemy forces, thus preventing enemy forces from massing for a final assault. From defensive positions on the reverse slope, the close-in battle builds in intensity. The defending force does not fire its direct fire weapons, which are located throughout the MBA on adjacent slope positions, counter-slope positions, or reverse slope positions until suitable targets appear. At the same time, the defending force shifts the effects of its indirect fires to those areas forward of the crest and forward military slope. When possible, other units on complementary terrain support units in reverse slope positions. This is especially desirable when those supporting units can observe and place fires on the crest and forward slope. In a defense on a counterslope, reverse forward slope, fires must cover the area immediately in front of the reverse slope positions to the topographical crest. Units organize defensive positions to permit fires on enemy approaches around and over the crest and on the forward slopes of adjacent terrain features, if applicable. The key factors that affect the organization of these areas are mutually supporting covered and concealed positions, numerous existing and reinforcing obstacles, the ability to bring devastating fires from all available weapons onto the crest, and a counterattack force. Depending on the terrain, the most desirable location for the reserve may be on the counterslope or the reverse military crest of the counterslope. Control measures. Defensive control measures introduced in previous chapters continue to apply. Units place engagement areas and obstacles on the reverse slope. The topographical crest normally marks the far edge of the engagement area. Defending forces must dominate the crest with fires to prevent enemy forces from successfully engaging the main body. Executing a reverse slope defense. When executing a reverse slope defense, units place special emphasis on the proper organization of the forward slope to provide observation across the entire front and security to the main BPs. A fire support plan to prevent the enemy forces' occupation and use of the topographical crest. A counterattack plan that specifies measures necessary to clear the crest or regain it from enemy control. Fire support to destroy, disrupt, and attrit enemy forces on the forward slope. Units normally place FPFs along the topographical crest and employ them as enemy forces reach the first row of defilated obstacles. Units use the reserve to counterattack and expel the enemy from the topographical crest if massed indirect fires do not defeat the attack. A reverse slope defense pursues offensive opportunities through surprise and deceptive actions. It is uniquely suited to infantry forces in mountainous terrain. When conducting a reverse slope defense, surprise results from defending in a manner for which the enemy forces are not prepared. Once this defense successfully halts an enemy attack, it may have limited further value because the effect of surprise is difficult to attain. The entire forward security force should not withdraw automatically as soon as the first enemy units reach the FIBA. Units can leave in place security elements located in areas where enemy forces have not advanced. These security forces adjust to the enemy forces' advance and continue to conduct security operations as far forward as possible. They continue to resist enemy supporting efforts, such as the enemy's reconnaissance effort, thereby upsetting the enemy's coordination and allowing MBA units to fight one engagement or battle at a time. Doing this increases the chances for success, even if the enemy attack penetrates the MBA in one or more areas. In some cases, security forces can attack enemy elements from the rear, engage high-payoff targets, or operate between echelons to isolate leading enemy units. Commanders may order security force information collection assets to displace to one or both sides of an enemy penetration and continue to maintain observation of enemy forces approaching the MBA. These information collection assets can facilitate friendly counterattacks by observing and providing access to the enemy forces' flanks. Alternatively, units may plan to monitor those areas where enemy forces have not advanced into the MBA solely by technical means to prevent the isolation and possible encirclement of these assets. Units coordinate battle handover between their security forces and MBA forces as quickly and efficiently as possible to minimize vulnerability to enemy fire. Security forces need to retain freedom of maneuver until the start of their passage of lines. Fire support assets help cover the withdrawal of these security forces. Support and sustainment elements of the security force leave the security area as early as possible to avoid hampering the movement of maneuver forces. Normally, the security force hands off the battle to the nearest MBA force. Units consider their security force's next mission before initiating battle handover between their security and MBA force. Factors that may affect this decision are the status of their security forces, their subsequent mission preparation requirements, and the size and nature of the reserve required by the situation. Commanders may decide to employ their security forces immediately as their reserve, which would release their initial reserves for other tasks. Alternately, they may decide to use their security forces to conduct additional security operations on the flanks of MBA forces as a battle progresses. However, it may be some time before a given security force is ready for commitment. Therefore, units more often wait until their security forces reconstitute and they commit their initial reserves before designating their former security forces as their new reserves. Units plan the location of their security forces' assembly areas on the follow-on missions they assign to those security forces. They locate those assembly areas to rapidly support their ongoing operations, yet keep withdrawn security units from interfering with ongoing decisive and shaping operations. After passage, their security forces normally move to these locations to prepare for subsequent operations. At a minimum, units rearm and refuel their security forces as soon as possible after their relief from the security mission. Additional sustainment concerns include casualty evacuation, maintenance requirements, and resupply of other classes of supply.